This is Ryan Stegman, and you're listening to Drunk on Comics.
And now to introduce the first couple interviews that we were able to conduct at Motor City Comic Con.
Yeah, Tony says a couple like there was only two, but in fact, we've got a handful.
Yes, we actually have three sets of interviews coming out your way later on in the next 2 weeks. But this one starts off
with Cena Grace and Daniel Friedman.
Jay Fosgate.
We have Mark McKenna.
We also got the opportunity to talk to Charles Soule, and Ryan Stegman stopped by during that one.
Yeah, that was really cool, because they're a creative team together right now.
And we have something completely different, not really an artist or anything, but someone who could help out some artists.
Yeah, Bill the Bookbinder.
Yes, that's his new nickname now. He was sharing the booth right next to us, so we decided to give him an interview in his company. Hopefully you guys enjoy this first set of interviews, and we'll be back at the end.
We are here at Motor City Comic Con in Novi, Michigan, and our very first guests of the day, good friends of the show, Cena Grace and Daniel Friedman. What's going on, guys?
Holler.
Hey.
And we've actually got the full crew. Is this the first time we've done a full crew, full interview?
Yes. Well, with our setup that we have here, our booth is just asking for people to come over and get interviews. So
it's like a remote recording studio that's not a studio.
And not really remote, but...
That's remote.
I don't see any buttons.
Handheld.
Yeah, there's buttons on this thing. So
you guys are just pushing my buttons is all I know.
Hey-o!
Yeah, so Derek, Tony, Matt, and Kevin all here. So we are here with the creators of one of our favorite books right now, Burn the Orphanage.
Yes,
and you are. So,
it's the name of a comic book, not a thing you should go out and do.
Yeah, maybe. It depends on how much we're drinking. But, so... Fill us in a little bit about the book. We're now basically on volume two.
Yeah, I'll let Daniel do it. This is Cena talking. Daniel, give us the quick pitch.
So volume two picks up right where issue three of volume one left off. And we're going to follow our heroes through a new adventure, dealing with much bigger stakes than they've ever had to face before.
That says nothing about the book. The book is... It's about an orphan named Rock who was left for dead in a burning orphanage, and since then he's grown up into quite the brawler, and in true form, you know, in true love of the video games we grew up playing, like Streets of Rage and Final Fight, there's just a lot of people walking around beating each other up, and then we go all over the place, and now I'll let Daniel redeem himself.
So, yes, in the first... volume, Rock and friends faced a lot of enemies, but now they're fighting giant robots. That's
what all
it
you need to know.
Is there a chance that we might see some battling toads in the future?
Way down the line, okay. That's a possibility.
Yeah.
We gotta get there, though. It's gotta happen organically.
We gotta get two dragons first.
We gotta get ooze, so we can have turtles or toads, or street sharks.
Those were all good games.
Yeah.
Based on the conversation we were having last night, I'm still hoping to see the hooker ghosts.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the nice thing about this book is, if you kick off the bad guy's head in the first issue, and you have a chick growing horns during coitus in the second issue, and your lead character bites off a dude's wiener, and, you know, like... Anything goes, and that's been fun for us to do that.
Stripper ninjas.
Topless stripper ninjas.
Yeah.
Wait. How do you see them? I mean, how do you see
These are corporeal.
Okay.
But you're thinking ahead of us, and we've been brainstorming how you see-through boobies.
Okay.
So, kind of explain the whole process of the co-creating, because, Cena, you are co-writing and drawing. And then Daniel is co-writing as well. What's that process like for you guys?
Well, the process on Burn the Orphanage is unlike anything else we've ever done. And it shouldn't work, but it does. And I think that's just a product of our friendship and our relationship and us just being able to shoot things back and forth and let it happen organically and let the story kind of go where it may.
Yeah, the process to date has sort of been... Something inspires us that shouldn't necessarily mean we should make money off of it, and then we talk about it, and then I come back and I lay it out a little bit. I'm like, oh, I think this is how what we talked about would play out, and then, you know, Daniel says yes or no, and in a lot of ways you're very much the like soul of the book because he.
Well, thank you.
Well, no, but you know what I mean. Like, there's heart and soul. Like, yeah, I give you.
But I think that the reason the it works is basically our writing sessions are just us hanging out. It's very non formal, and we just shoot the shit. We get burgers. We have
play
beers,
video games together.
We'll play video games.
He'll play. I'll watch.
And we'll just sort of talk it out and figure it out as we go, as opposed to sitting down and writing it and doing note cards and planning out long arcs. We sort of let the book organically unravel.
If anyone read those original like Mark Waid, Humberto Ramos Impulse comics, they're sort of like that, where like Mark Waid said that he would just set up cliffhangers. He had no clue how he was going to resolve, and we never don't. We always know our endings, but we definitely leave things kind of like, and maybe I do this and it makes Daniel uncomfortable and he just puts up with it, but like, there are certain things that I find come together at the last minute that work out gloriously, and the organic process does make it more fun for me, but...
Yeah. And Cena will generally give us about 24 hours to finish the book before it has to be at the printer. And that causes a pretty mad rush.
That's
but
generous. 24 hours.
24, really, yeah, it's been about 24 hours. But, so it's that crunch time is when the issue really comes together. So,
you know, writing on this and drawing on it, do you ever have, like, thoughts of you already have the panel laid out and then you got to come up with some way to tell that story? Or are you more write it and then you're going to start doing the drawings from the writing?
I'm more visual, and with it, the whole thing, the reason why it even happened was I wasn't supposed to work on this. I was supposed to make, like, you know, a sequel to my gothic-tinged graphic novel, Not My Bag. And just one day I was on a plane, and we knew that we wanted to do something called Burn the Orphanage. We knew that we wanted to do something with those old video games, and we were looking at all these, like, things on Tumblr, and it was sort of coming together. And then one day I was on a plane after a con, and I just had those first four pages where, like, I knew, like, all right, like, big burning orphanage, and, like, Rock's like, everybody died, everybody but me, and then it, like, cuts to the credits, and I got off the plane, and I called Daniel, and I told him about it, and Daniel's like, I got shivers.
Yeah, it was a lot of talk. We had been sort of talking about it in a not-so-serious sense for months, and then Cena started drawing. And then I was like, we're doing it. He was like, yeah. And then we just started doing it.
So it's been chill. But yeah, so it's... I do think in panels and I do think in images first.
Yeah, there's a lot of times when Cena will present me a page or panels or a sequence. And I go, okay, cool. Well, we got to figure out how to make this work narratively now. So,
Since you guys are, you know, both doing this, I know that there's at least one character who, if you know, you were going to cast her in the movie of making this, who that would be. But have you thought about who
Isabel.
Else?
No, I'm just kidding.
Have you thought about who you would, like, if you could have somebody make a film out of it, who you would want to play characters? Or,
well, it's tricky because a lot of the characters, I think with the exception of Rock, are all based on friends or people that we know.
Or musicians or like people we've encountered.
Or real people. And so I think, at least for me personally, all in the movie, they would all be played by their real selves in a weird way, which I know wouldn't sell a lot of tickets, but that would be the truest.
I always joke that, like, and it sucks now because he just got cast as Gambit, but, like, to me, I'm like, oh, Channing Tatum can do no wrong, and, like, he's got the Rock body, and if he just dyed his eyebrows and let him grow out his hair, like, I'd let him be Rock, but I know Daniel doesn't necessarily
agree with
me.
Like, after seeing This Is the End, I could see Channing being Rock.
Yeah. He he always impresses me. And I'm not into meaty, soft-lipped men, but, like, he's just got an aura about him. He just makes life look fun and chill.
Now, Daniel, we've talked to Cena before about kind of where he, you know, how he got into comics. We haven't gotten your story.
I kind of fell into comics a little bit backwards. I was working with a comic book artist named Tom Coker, and we decided to... He had directed a film, and I was actually the editor on the project, and so that's how we met, and then we decided to start writing together, and I also started to color his work at that time, and we just hit it off and did a project together called Undying Love, and that was sort of my entry point in the comics was we just did that book together. We wrote a story, and we were like, we can do the book, and we did, so... And since then, I've been working on Burn the Orphanage, and I've got other stuff in the pipeline. And yeah, that's basically it.
Any of it you can tell us about?
Nothing announced yet, so no. But I've got three books in the works, so they're coming.
Cool. The one thing I want to mention, if people haven't read this book, I mean, it's, yeah, there's a lot of crazy fight action scenes and stuff like that. But the thing that really drew me in, and I'm still going to go back to it, is that diner scene.
Oh, yeah.
Know, no. That you had there. And for as crazy, wild ride as it is, the characters that are in it have such good, true human emotion. It's hard to not enjoy the story and actually get drawn in because you're like, it's bullshit. This would never happen. But you care about the characters, and I think that's what makes the difference on the book.
It's funny because that sequence in the third issue was problematic for some people because they wanted a shallow, nothing but kind of fun romp, and other people loved it, and so it was sort of split the audience a little bit. But for us,
those people that wanted the fun romp, they're wrong.
Yeah, we feel the same way too. But it's been interesting to see the reaction to what we want to do is give these characters depth and let them evolve and get along and not get along. And some people don't like that, other people do. But for us, it was something we really wanted to do, and I don't think we regret it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of books, comics, TV shows, whatever, there are specific, like, thematic anchors that you honor over anything else, and that allows you to think outside of the box of, like, oh, that's a superhero book. But you go, well, no, the book's really about, and in our case, it's about friendship, and your friends are your family. So that's the thing we always choose to honor. Like, we honor that over the video game shtick, I think. And, it, you know, it's not a shtick, but I think you're making a face.
Well, do you get disappointed when people are, like, skip over the point you're trying to make with friendship, and they're like, oh, no, the action's just really cool?
Well, that scene the scene everyone's talking about, we did, like, 12 pages of two characters just talking about relationships in the middle of, you know, an action-packed finale, and people were put off. Some people were put off by it. Some people, like Derek, were just like,
it was
vibing.
Polarizing.
It was polarizing, yeah.
I could have read issue after issue of that. I mean, it was so well written and drawn out. I mean, it was fantastic.
Which one of you two came up with that dialogue?
Well, it's... Well, can we tell them?
Yeah, I don't care.
That dialogue is us.
Daniel's Lex and I'm Bear.
Well, I wasn't going to say this.
If anyone's listening, they know.
Yeah, but those characters are kind of ciphers for us. And so we wanted to put more of ourselves in the book. And that was sort of... I was inspired by Cena's autobiographical work and wanting to put more of my angst and soul into the book. And that we just thought it would be a fun opportunity to do something. We wanted to do this, like, My Dinner with Andre thing intercut with the big action climax. So... Yeah.
We're proud of it. We're happy. We stand by it. And when you listeners and when you dudes read the new arc, I think we balance it a lot better because right now everyone is sort of like at odds because their city is under siege by this evil corporation, and Rock just came back from some other dimension and, you know, sees his friends and his girlfriend, and they've basically, like, gotten really close with the chick who...
Sounds like an X-Men book.
Hell yeah. That's the thing, is I love X-Men. X-Men's my book. I love character drama.
And fighting giant robots? What?
Sentinels? But yeah, he has to basically put up with this traitor who has now been accepted in the group, and it causes all sorts of, you know, rifts, and I love that stuff, and I think that's better to have that embedded in the action than to have them separated. You know, again, people love X-Men, and we want to get that energy in the book where it's action, it's emotional, and then it's like cool fashion,
relationships and friendship.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And the strain they're put under by giant robots attacking. Yeah,
so. Cool.
That would put a strain on a relationship, I think.
Trust me, big strain.
Now, issue one of.
Reign of Terror. Oh, sorry.
Burn the Orphanage, Reign of Terror.
Yeah.
Hit here a week and a half ago.
Cool.
Issue two is scheduled to come out when?
First week of every month. So first week of June, first Wednesday.
June, okay. I think it's the 7th. Don't quote me, but it's the first week, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so this is a five-issue series.
Five issues. We're shipping monthly, and we have a really nice big plan growing for a follow-up arc that is going to basically take everything and bring it all like legitimately full circle. It's great.
We're dying to get to the third arc, which is we'll tease the title. It's called Bitter Rivals. Is the third arc, and that's
okay. Heard it here first.
You didn't though, but you did. Yes. Exclusive.
I will give us an exclusive of something.
Issue 3, we'll meet a character named Minnie, and she doesn't seem like a big deal now, but keep an eye on her.
All right.
Sounds good.
Well, listeners, definitely check out Burn the Orphanage. You can get it at your local comic book shop. And
it's from Image. I don't know if we said that.
Oh, yeah, Image Comics.
Volume 1, first trade came out last week, as well as the first issue of
Granitaire. Oh, that's right. Yeah, they did hit.
Born
to Lose. Volume 1 is in stores, as is Issue 1 of Granitaire.
We've got an awesome cover gallery, great contributors, and yeah, if you like Brawlers with Heart, that's us.
It's an awesome book by two awesome guys. Definitely check it out.
And I know we've said before, Cena, if you have everything that Cena Grace tied down, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr,
it's all me, at Cena Grace, SinaGrace, so.
Daniel, where can people find you?
Go to my website, www.bandit-town.com, and then all my social networking stuff's on there. It's all mixed up names, so that's easiest, bandit-town.com.
Awesome.
And, yeah.
All right.
Thank you guys for making us drunk in love with you guys.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And it's pretty much the end of the show, so it's time to actually go get drunk.
Woo! Party town.
Cheers. Let's go. Well, it's a little bit later on in the day on Saturday, and I am here with Mr. Jay Fosgate. How's it going, Jay?
It's going wonderful. Thank you for coming up to the table.
Yeah, this is the first I've seen where you haven't had a horde around you pretty much all day.
It's been amazing. Bodhi Troll has really opened up my fan base, and they've all come out this weekend to Motor City, and I couldn't be more thankful. So,
can you give our listeners a little bit of a background on Bodhi Troll in case they haven't seen the book yet or haven't heard about it?
Yeah, Bodhi is published by Red 5 Comics. It's about a fairy tale troll that wants to be big and scary, but he's too cute and cuddly, so no one takes him seriously. The adventures are all ages appropriate, and all ages have been enjoying them, from little kids to older folk. And it is very much a fairy tale in the vein of Bone, or of humor very akin to The Princess Bride, is how I like to describe it.
Yeah.
And it combines my love of monsters, fairy tales, and just cartoon nonsense.
Okay. Now, how'd you get into comics and, you know, drawing Bodhi Troll and all the other things that you draw?
Well, I entered the industry in 2009 when I was working for Ape Entertainment, and they published my first graphic novel, Dead Duck. Mm-hmm. Which was more of a mature audience's book about a duck who works for the Grim Reaper. That book did pretty well, and from there I started to do licensed comics for Ape. I worked on DreamWorks characters when they had that license. I wrote and drew the Sesame Street comic book with other artists and writers. I've worked for Boom, working on Adventure Time, doing covers for them. Most recently, I'm doing a cover for Boom for a cartoon called The Amazing World of Gumball.
Oh, cool.
So I've been kind of spreading my wings, you know, in this industry. But with Bodhi, about 2 or 3 years ago, I had this idea for an all-ages comic. And that's where I came up with the idea, and to combine all my interests that I just mentioned. And I went out to San Diego Comic Con. I met Red 5. They'd already heard about my work because of Dead Duck, and they were anxious to work with me, and I was anxious to work with them. It was just a perfect marriage of talents, and ever since then, Bodhi's been a pretty big success through them, and I've been very happy.
Well, and it's nice, because I know at least the shop that I go to, I see Bodhi Troll on the shelves on New Comic Book Day when it comes out, and I was like, that's awesome, because, you know, I mean, Red 5 is an up-and-coming publisher, and, you know, it's nice to know that, obviously, it's available through Diamond Distribution, so comic shops can get that.
Yes.
And I love seeing books like that out on the shelf. And it was in the middle of everything else. It wasn't in the kids section. It was It was out with everything.
I love that.
And I was like, but I'll give a little shout out to my shop. It's Fanfare Sports and Entertainment down in Kalamazoo.
Oh,
and they are fantastic.
Wonderful.
With their selection. They get tons of great stuff. But yeah, I saw that, and I've been familiar with who you are for a number of years.
Sure.
And I walked by, and I'm like, hell yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, so, thank you.
Yeah. So. outside of if people don't have if their comic shop picking up, you know, Bodhi Troll, where else can they find it?
Bodhi is available through Comixology digitally if you like your comics digital. Otherwise, I would say contact Red 5 Comics online, and you can order the hard copies through them. There's some other venues that off the top of my head I can't think of, but almost anywhere you can order print comics. I mean, I would say Amazon is a last-ditch resort. I like to support the individual comic shops first and foremost. Yep. I say go to your local comic shop. They can get it through Diamond.
Yeah. Or find a local shop online if you don't have one around.
And, absolutely, yeah.
And then they can ship it to you.
That's it. That's what I tell people. First and foremost, go through the comic shops. I cannot support them enough.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. No, I'm a brick-and-mortar guy. We actually just finished a discussion about digital versus print. And,
yeah.
You know, they're pluses and minuses to both. But
there are. I mean, the only reason I mention digital at all is because that was part of Red 5's work ethic their business plan involved digital. And I think that's cool. I think they're one of the first companies to get on board digital. And whether we like it or not, that's the wave of the future. So long as it does not remove print from the equation, I'm okay with it.
I have a hard time seeing print ever go away, at least for this medium.
I feel the same way. I don't see it going away either. I know a lot of people are worried about it, and I would be worried about it too if I thought it was a realistic thing. I think print, there's still too many people that love print. Print is what collects. Print is what will be there, you know. Digital is just not physical enough.
Well, and for people like me who are collectors, it doesn't make sense to have my iPad get signed by
the creator. I agree. Well, so. It's the same way I feel about working digitally with your art. Like, I draw everything pen and paper. I just color digitally. And I think people who work all digital, I give them a lot of credit, but you are cutting out part of your economy by doing that because you won't have the original pages to sell.
Yes.
You know? So, I don't know. I'm very old-fashioned that way. I admit it. I'm kind of a codger when it comes to that stuff, but I'm okay with it.
So. You know, but I think there's the... In some comics, you know, digitally creating the art can work very well.
Yes.
But it's got to be for the right story.
And I agree. You
know, I think something like Bodhi Troll, where it's more organic, it absolutely has to be pencil and ink.
I think you're right. You know, I mean, by nature, because it's a fairy tale, I think you need that sort of old-fashioned pencil, pen, paper thing, or it loses some of the magic. Whereas one of the most talented cartoonists I know of, Jim Anderson, who does a webcomic called Ellie on Planet X, works 100% digitally, and because it's this futuristic space, adorable all-ages comic, perfect medium for it.
Yeah.
No one does it as well as he does, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and that's a great example.
Yeah.
Know? When it is futuristic, let it be digital.
Yeah, it fits the medium, so.
Cool. Now, Jay, where can people find you online?
www.jfosgett.com.
All right, and Twitter? I think you're on there?
I'm on Twitter at JP Fosgett, so.
All right, cool. Well, guys, go check out this book. It's something I think everybody's going to love. So, Jay, thanks for the time, man.
Thank you for your time.
How'd it go?
All right, we are here live in our booth at Motor City with Mr. Mark McKenna. Mark, how you doing, sir?
It's great. Great show.
Nice to see you again. We had a good time catching up with you last year.
Yeah.
So, for our newer listeners in particular that you know, maybe haven't heard that interview from last year, can you give us a little background about yourself and, you know, how you've gotten in the industry? You've been doing this for a long time.
Sure. This is actually my 30th year in comics.
Wow. Has it been that long
already? Yeah. I started in Marvel in, it's 29, it'll be 30 in 2015. Started at Marvel Comics on staff. I got a call from John Romita Sr., I didn't want to say it was April in 1985. It might have been even 84, but I had actually told him I couldn't take the job on because at the time they were paying minimum wage, and I was living out in Long Island, having to commute 60 miles a day for $4.50 an hour. wouldn't even pay my commutation fee to go back and forth to New York. So I actually told him I couldn't accept the job the first two times he offered it to me. And then the third time he said... this is a job that's going
to
go on for about a year and a half.
I'm trying to tweet about you guys.
I could probably you know, get me assisting work and things like that. So I said yes, and I worked there for a year and a half, and never looked back.
Cool. Now, I know I first became familiar with your work on Exiles.
Right.
And but you've got a couple other projects going on right now.
Yeah, Exiles is one of those books that I've done. that I had a vested interest in. I enjoyed reading it and the characterization and the way their interactions between the characters. I've done over 525 books, and I can't always say that about a lot of the books I've worked on. Another one was Legion 89 and 90, which was a little, read as a little soap opera-y.
Mm-hmm.
But currently I'm working on two new projects, one to come out for this Halloween. It's called the Banana Tail Halloween Special. It's my little monkey character called Banana Tail, and I'm doing a Halloween-themed comic book, 32 pages. So I decided, instead of calling it Banana Tail Halloween, I call it the Banana Tail Halloween Special. And I got some really, you know, nice talent in that. I got Jim Calafiore doing a story with me. I have a girl named Blake Northcott who's got a huge following. She's up in Canada.
Yep, I'm familiar with Blake.
She's wrote her first comic story for me. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, I had to go through explaining how to do word balloon placement and you know, work over her script a little bit. She's great. I got a new up-and-coming guy named Ryan Brown doing a five-page story for me. And I got a guy who might be familiar more in the DC universe, a guy named Geraldo Borges, who did the Justice League Rise of Arsenal. Did a four and a three-page story for me, and it looks really nice.
That's cool. Now, Ryan Brown, are we talking Ryan Brown from Manhattan Projects and Bedlam and God Hates Astronauts? Or is
I think it's a different Ryan Brown. This Ryan Brown does a thing called Zombie Pets.
Okay, is there an E on the end of his name?
There is.
Okay,
I think he might have. Is that? I think he might have been confused with another Ryan Brown at some point. Actually. Yeah.
Yeah, because there's one that we've gotten to know, Ryan Brown. That
is he a New Yorker?
He's actually originally from the Detroit area, but okay. I don't know where he resides now.
Yeah, the Ryan Brown I know is he's over in the Poughkeepsie area, I want to say. I'm not sure, but I do think there are two Ryan Browns. He gets confused with this other Ryan Brown.
That'd be very easy to confuse.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So we've got Banana Tales, and that's coming out in October. And now, are you self-publishing, or are you going?
Yes, I have an imprint called Banana Tail Press.
Okay.
I was originally, Banana Tail was one of those books that Simon & Schuster and Golden Books were looking at, and they were interested in it, and then you know, ultimately they didn't pull the trigger on it. But I knew that their interest made me more excited about doing it, and I just said, I'll do it myself, and I'll build it. And now I have, you know, I'm on my fourth book. At one year, I had 1,440,000 hits on the website, and it was nice. It was nice. It's something that I'm passionate about because I did it when my kids were four and newborn, and that are 23 and 19, and I've had it. I've had it that long. You know, the other thing I'm working on was Combat Jacks.
Yep.
Combat Jacks is my my sci-fi homage to the 50s horror sci-fi movies. You know, like the It Came from Another World, those kind of things. I was hanging around with my son at Halloween 2 years ago and came up with the concept of there's not enough good monster jack-o'-lanterns. So I created a sci-fi adventure where this planet that's got knocked into our solar system by an asteroid is inhabited by these jack-o'-lantern monsters that are actually, we're going to find out, indigenous to Earth. That we don't know about, that they've been lying dormant for hundreds of years waiting for their time to strike.
Just had to wait for the pumpkin seed to sprout.
Yes, well, that's so to speak, yeah. But we also go with the concept that what if these things were on Earth and a seed got into a spaceship and, you know, and got back, you know, years and years ago.
But that's always a fun idea.
Yeah. So I'm doing it as a four-issue mini. So I originally did it as a one-shot. And IDW, Chris Ryle at IDW, told me that if I did it as a four-issue miniseries that he would collect it for me. So then I had to think about bringing it back to Earth. I got them on this other planet. I'm bringing more people in. You know, it's just, it's a little more interesting this way. But it also makes me think outside the box a little bit more what I want to do with it.
Yeah. Now, are you writing and drawing all this?
I'm certainly writing it. The one thing that I'm weak on is I don't have the military jargon down. I have no military background. And I brought in this Sam Eagleston, who's sitting next to me at this show. And he definitely knows. He's not a military guy, but he has military family, so he knows more about that stuff. So, you know, he gets involved with cliques and LZs and things that I'm not real familiar with. And he just gave me a nice little professional edge because I've never been really a writer before. So for me, it was just taking it up a level, and I enjoyed working with him. He takes my idea and runs with it. And I have no issue with, you know, putting the brakes on him because he's really been good for me to do it, you know.
That's cool. That's very cool. Quick question for you before we let you go, because I'm sure you probably are going to have people waiting back there for you, so we're kind of keeping an eye on your booth. But we briefly talked about this last evening, but how excited are you to see Blink on screen?
Yeah, that's a good one for me. Because of Exiles and the beginning of that series, you know, that's when they introduced her. I mean, she had been around before, but never her own book. And originally when I started on Exiles, I used to sign the vouchers Blink and the Exiles, and they told me it's not that anymore, it's just called the Exiles. So to see her live in the screen is kind of cool for me. I don't feel like I feel a little like she's my baby, you know, in that respect.
Yeah.
You know, you never get that with comic books.
And I mean, I've only seen a couple trailers, but she looks fantastic on screen.
Yeah, even the trailers look great. I'm not a hardcore X-Men guy, but and the nice thing about that series was it was a kind of a what-if kind of series. You can do whatever you want, and nobody can necessarily needs to be hurt, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm even excited about the trailers, and... yeah, there's a couple other cool characters in there I'm looking forward to seeing, too.
Yeah. Now, where can people find the Banana Tales and Combat Jacks?
I have a website dedicated to either project. I have a Banana Tale website called it's bananatale.com. It's like prehensile tale. It's not like a story. And it's one word, Banana Tale. And then I have combatjacks.com, which I'm putting up new artwork from the next issue, which, by the way, Kelly Jones did a cover for me. And I got it colored by Eisner Award-winning Laura Martin.
Wow.
Yeah, which is exciting. And I also brought in Cynthia Rothrock. I don't know if you guys remember Cynthia Rothrock, the martial arts actress from the 80s. She had over 40 movies to her credit. She actually told me she would be in my book, so I actually made her a kick-ass space marine in the second issue, and I have an out variant cover with her on the cover.
Yeah, I remember seeing a little snippets of that on Facebook here, you know, maybe a month or so, or a couple months ago, whatever it was.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that, too. I'm going to do a variant for her and have her sign 50 copies for me. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Mark, thank you for taking time to talk to us again. Looking forward to seeing you know, all your new stuff coming out. And where can our... where can our listeners find you online? Are you on Twitter and Facebook?
I do a little Twitter, Mark McKenna 419, and my Facebook is maxed out right now. But if you want to reach out and find me, I'll as people leave my friendship, I always add new people.
But they can still follow you.
Absolutely, follow me. I dig it. I keep it light and casual. I don't get religious, or I don't get into politics. It all is about the art and having fun with it. You know.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Mark, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Tony here with Drunk on Comics, and now for something completely different. We are going to talk to a book manufacturer, a bookmaker, something for any of you artists and writers out there to possibly go ahead and get your stuff out in print. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and the company?
Okay, my name is Bill. I'm with Thompson Shore. We're based in Dexter, Michigan, just outside of Ann Arbor. And we produce hard and soft cover books, black color, hardcover, soft cover, anywhere from one copy up to about 50,000 copies. It's all made in Michigan.
Yes. Looking at the spread you have here, there's everything from comic book type looking things to regular just print. And you have kind of the, I don't know, hardcover, soft covers, as you said. There's a lot of different books here. Like, tell us the process of like making just one type of book.
Sure. Our as you touched on, our customers run the full gamut from very large publishers who do many, many titles each year, many copies, like I said, up to 50,000, down to guys that are writing children's books and want to produce just 50 to get it out there as a pilot project. Really anything from soft cover, hard cover, fully illustrated, just black, graphic novels. Anything that people want to get printed, and we even help with marketing and distribution of books. So our process, we take a big roll of paper, we put ink on it, we fold it up, and we bind it into a book.
Now tell us about, you were talking about some of the different bindings and everything. How does that process go into determining what type of book? Is it more or less the guest, the customer, can kind of pick up how they want to do it, or do you guys help them through that process?
Yeah, it's completely up to the customer, but we do advise on different types of paper and different types of bind. I've seen people do what we call saddle stitch, which is more like a magazine with staples on the spine, you know, your standard comic book kind of bind. I've seen a lot of what we call perfect bind, which is a traditional soft cover book. We also do sewn hardcover books. I've seen people do spiral wire binds. Really, whatever they're looking for, we let them know that it's available. We show samples. We help them pick the paper, and we consult on how much it's going to cost if they print just in black, or if they decide to do full color from end to end, how much that's going to cost. A lot of people, it comes down to what the cost is, and they make their decision based on that. But we're not afraid to give quotes on the full gamut and help people decide.
All right. Now, as talking about more of what we do, we talk more of the comic book side. How many, I mean, I'm sure that you have a lot more just books and everything you do, but do you guys do comics and everything?
Sure. Most of the comics that we see are graphic novel kind of things that end up being, you know, 50, 100, 200 pages bound into a soft cover book, just because that's what fits us best. But we'll do anything from just an 8-pager up to thousands of pages.
All right. And so for our enthusiastic writers and artists who may want to make a book, where can we find you guys?
You can find us on the web at thompsonshore.com. Or we're on Facebook as well, LinkedIn. You can find us at Comic Cons. We like to show off some of the quality work that our publishers have made. Best way is probably our website, thompsonshore.com.
All right, well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, it is nearing the end of Saturday here at Motor City Comic Con, and myself, Kevin, and Matt are talking to Mr. Charles Soule.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Great.
We're, I actually still have a ton of energy, surprisingly.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think the show starts a little later than some. Like, sometimes these shows start at 9 in the morning, and this one, I think, was what, like 10:30 or something?
Or 10:30.
So, you know, that little extra hour, it does all the, makes all the difference.
Yeah, but you must be used to being busy all the time as you're, like, writing 7 books monthly?
I'm 8 right now.
Okay.
I wrote a...
only 8.
I wrote a script this morning. I got up at 7 and wrote a script before the show, so, yeah.
And you practice law?
Yeah, I practice law, too.
Yeah.
I didn't do that this morning, though. I didn't practice any law this morning.
Do you ever sleep?
I slept some last night. Okay. I actually went to bed early last night. I didn't get too drunk on comics last night.
Ah, nice. Very nice.
That's our problem.
Yeah.
Yes. So anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
You have a ton of books, 8 books out. So we've got Swamp Thing, Thunderbolts, Letter 44, Superman, Wonder Woman.
Uh-huh.
Inhumans.
Yeah.
What else am I missing here?
Let's see. Red Lantern. Say Red Lanterns.
No, I didn't say Red Lantern.
She-Hulk. Must have said that.
Yep, She-Hulk. Yep.
Dead Letter 44.
Letter 44. Anyway, you know, the point is, there's a whole bunch of books. And I'm working on Death of Wolverine for Marvel right now.
Yep.
There's, believe it or not, some stuff that hasn't been announced, which almost makes me, like, sick to my stomach to think there's more stuff I'm working on. But I am. So.
You know what? That's great.
There's Ryan Stegman.
And we do have Ryan here.
My collaborator.
So perfect. Ryan walks in at the ideal time to join.
Collaborator.
Yeah. Yeah. Ryan, so, pop on over and we'll get you in here.
Didn't intend this.
Behind my table? Well, that's super weird. God, you're just doing weird stuff all day.
So now we've got Ryan Stegman here.
Hi.
Annual interview. So
yeah, once a year.
Let's talk a little Inhumans since you're here.
Yeah. So Ryan is staring at me intently.
I'll say all the stuff that we can say because I don't know what I can say.
Yeah, all right. So Ryan is taking over from the great Joe Madd, Joe Madureira. He's taking over with issue 4. Issue 2 hits, I think, any minute, which will be exciting. And basically what we're doing is building this huge kind of multi-layered epic sci-fi fantasy thing that has a lot of awesome new characters in it, many of which Ryan is designing for the very first time. One of the things that's been fun about working with Ryan is that he has ideas, which is weird.
Not just a trained monkey.
Yeah. And so we were talking about, because you have to make up a whole bunch of characters for this series, because the idea is that a lot of new Inhumans have been activated on Earth when, you know, crazy things happen, Terrigen Mist, blah, blah, blah. So just imagine a whole bunch of new superheroes showing up, and you have to think of what those people's powers are and what they're going to do. And, you know, usually a lot of that's weight is on the writer, which is exhausting. And so when Ryan's like, I've got an idea for somebody, that was super cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was the allure of the book, was when they told me I got to create characters, you know, that was what made me want to do it, because it's pretty rare. I mean, especially at Marvel and DC and, you know, Big Two, it's rare that they actually back the creation of new characters. And,
right.
And it was on my list of things that I wanted to do at Marvel, so... When they threw that out there, I was kind of like, oh, okay. Now I understand what this project is, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And the opportunity to work with
Well, I was like, who? Charles who?
Yeah, of course.
Get rid of him.
I've never seen that name on a book ever.
So it's been great. I feel like we really clicked, like almost like instantly. It was like the stuff flying back and forth was really good. So, I mean, the issues that and the pages that have come in from Ryan's section and Joe's section, everything's, it's like it's a really, really solid project.
The Inhumans have a lot of, I guess, inherent powers.
Yeah.
How do you really separate them from, like, the mutants in the Marvel Universe?
Right. Well, I think one of the things that is different, at least with the current state of the Marvel Universe, is that, you know, there's tests for the X gene and things like that, but there really isn't a way to tell if you're going to be Inhuman. And so the way that it's working in the Marvel Universe is that, you know, any one of us, like, if the cloud of Terrigen mist that's roiling around the world swept through the Suburban Showcase, that's what this is, right?
Yeah.
The Suburban Showcase. Showcase
Showdown. Yes. That's what I always end up saying.
Anyway, if it's swept through the convention floor, a goodly number of these folks might, like, go
Derek
into
would
cocoon.
Be dead. I mean,
yes, right.
Oh, come actually. On. Why do I get killed in every book?
Yeah, I'd totally be an Inhuman, I'm just saying.
Could pop up and have powers. And so part of the fun of the book is talking about people who, you know, are brand new. Like, on day one, they're working in their cubicle. On day two, they've got this weird stuff going on in their lives. And so that kind of flip switch is part of what makes it really fun.
A little scary, too.
Yeah. I think it's an uncertain time in the Marvel Universe, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I think that it's, I don't know, I think it's really interesting, especially, like, what I was talking to Charles about yesterday is to differentiate from mutants and stuff like that. Like, the mutants, they can be, you know, they can be ugly or whatever, but they're still, like, very heroic. And what I'm trying to do with Inhuman is give them, like, almost, like, all the characters that have an Inhuman power, I want them to have a little bit of, like, an alien, something unattractive about them, so that they're not so, like, so super heroic, but they are heroic, but they also kind of have to fight past the way that they look, because they all kind of look freakish, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What's it like now for you, Ryan? I mean, you've drawn Marvel's probably two biggest characters, with Spider-Man and Wolverine. How much fun is it to, like, actually sit there and just go, I get to start fresh?
Well, that's the best thing ever. Because we did Scarlet Spider in the same sort of way. Even though Kane had been created before and was a specific character, we had a brand new design. We moved him to Houston. All the other characters in the book were brand new. And it was like, I mean, I'm yet to have, other books have been very fun, but none has been as gratifying as that, because it felt like we created something from the ground up. Almost felt like doing an independent book in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
That's very similar to how this feels. Like, we've got a whole new world that we get to create within the Marvel Universe, but we're kind of, you know, we can, the other characters will guest star in the book, like, you know, like we've got Thor in issue 4.
Yeah, I mean, Thor shows up in issue 4, Captain America's in issue 2. And, like,
oh, I want to get Punisher in there, by the way. I mean, I need to talk to him.
Okay.
But they're coming into
maybe
our
get
world.
Maybe Daredevil in there? Daredevil.
We should put Frankencastle in. That's what everyone wants. All right. Castle. Anyway.
But yeah, no, it's, those characters are cameoing in the world that we get to create. So the whole thing is just whatever we want to do, and, you know, nobody can say, oh, well, we're going to use that character that you have created and haven't even shown yet, so you have to change your whole story. They can't do that because they've never seen the character, and they don't want them.
Not yet.
Not yet. Eventually down the line, everybody's going to steal Reader from us.
Yeah, Reader's the best. Reader is one of the new characters that Ryan drew for the first time. It's just, I mean, that's neat. Like, you make these people up, and then you get to, see them. It's really fun. I'll tell you who Reader is, actually. Reader shows up first in issue 4. He is a dude. He is an Inhuman. His power, basically, is to, things that he reads come to life, right? So they exist,
oh, cool.
Right? So if he reads the word fire, we'd all ban fire, okay? But that sort of emerged. He was exposed to the Terrigen Mist as a child, and he was in one of the premises of the book is that there's sort of hidden pockets of inhumanity around, and he grew up in one of those. When this manifested when he was a kid, they put his eyes out. He was like, that's too dangerous. You know, you can't have, like, who knows what he's going to read. But if he reads some crazy, like, I don't know, I could go
everybody
all
dead.
Sorts
Everybody's
of ways.
Dead.
Yeah, I was going to go with bestiality porn, but
just read the Bible and we're all
being... Well, yeah, I mean, it could be any, you know, who knows, right? It's very dangerous. So they put his eyes, they blinded him. And so when he shows up now, he looks kind of like Mad Max. He's super awesome, but he's blind, again, to keep hitting that note. And he's got a kick-ass seeing eye dog whose name is Fori. He's called Fourey because it's four E, four eyes, right?
Yeah.
And at, on his belt, he's got this little sheaf of stamped tin, like little sheets, each one of which has a word on it in Braille. So that's how he fights. He reads a word in Braille, and then...
Oh, wow.
And so, like, if he says see, he can see through his seeing seeing eye dog's eyes, and then he's fighting, like... I don't know. He's super badass. Awesome. He's
that's
super cool.
Clever. I like that.
If you come to my table, I have some pages with him, and he straps the dog to his chest and then flies. So that's pretty badass.
Yeah,
well, so that's awesome.
That's the kind of like we're trying to sort of aim for the fences or shoot for the fences with the shoot for the stars, aim for the fences.
Aim for the. No, you'd want to shoot.
Over guys,
the
it's not rocket surgery. It's okay. There you go. It's just we get to like we're really trying to make the characters really cool and not just like, oh, here's another dude who can who can fly or whatever. You know, like we're trying to make it interesting. And it's a great opportunity.
Yeah.
I can't leave without asking a question about Death Wolverine.
Sure.
Is that why you ended up on Inhumans? Because he's killing them off?
Yeah, right? I said I don't wanna kill Wolverine, put me on something else.
He's too noble. He's too wonderful.
We'll go with his murderer.
Yes.
You'll be an accomplice. And I know there's probably not too much that you can give away and stuff, but I guess what are you as a writer looking forward to killing off such a intricate character in the Marvel Universe?
You mean in terms of the way he affects so many different parts of the Marvel Universe?
Yeah.
I don't necessarily come at it from that angle. For me, it's not really necessarily about, you know, how the rest of the Marvel Universe is going to be affected so much, although we are thinking and talking about that a lot as we're doing this project. What I want to do is tell a story where, you know, that's sort of true to that character, right? Like, it's not so much all the other places he is, it's like who he's been and you know, the way he'd probably want to go out if he had to choose. And so on. I'll tell you the ending, though. Do you want to know how it ends?
He dies?
Yes.
Yeah.
See?
You should have seen that coming.
Now the one concern for us as fanboys is that ultimately, unless you're Uncle Ben, nobody stays dead.
When Stacy stays dead.
This one, he's dead. He's dead. He's done.
Yeah. Why would they want to bring him back? What possible reason would they have to bring Wolverine back?
Yeah, money.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Never.
My answer to that is like, you know, you got to think of it as... Do you want to read a really sweet story about something you haven't actually, like, read before?
Yeah.
Like, isn't that what we all want in comics? So who cares if he comes back in 5 years or 100 years or whatever? Like, let's tell an amazing kick-ass story, which is what we're going to do. So.
Well, and no doubt, I mean, we love everything we've read from you, and so, yeah, we're on board.
Oh, great. Yeah. Hope you guys enjoy it, you know? And obviously, you know, when you see issue 4, Reader in Action in China.
Yeah.
Spoiler, in China.
Yeah. Well, you know, if we see the name, you know, Soul, or we see the name Stegman on a book,
it's a mark of quality, right?
Yeah,
it's a mark of quality.
Soul Stegman.
Yep. Sounds like a hair product.
Yeah.
So, well, gentlemen, thank you. Kevin or Matt, did you guys have any other questions you wanted to...
Nah, we'll let these guys go back to their other annoying fans.
Yeah. All right. And, Brian, I know they can find you on Twitter and on Facebook.
Ryan Stegman, Ryan Stegman, Ryan Stegman on everything.
Okay, and Charles?
Same thing, Charles Soul everywhere.
Oh, I thought it's not Ryan Stegman on everything.
Yeah, we share. Yeah.
All right, guys, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate
thanks a lot.
It.
Take care.
So that wraps up our interviews from the first day of the con.
Yes, we also have many more from the second day, as well as a very, very fun drunken night, which we compiled all those together.
Yeah.
So hopefully you guys stick around later on this week and
you'll learn why we're truly called Drunk on Comics.